Jaundice screening for newborns, children of working moms and their lifestyles, preventing preterm births, and we're going to take a look at newborn jaundice. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We have a lot of good things to cover, and it seems like it just became baby week here at The Nursing Show, as certain news articles seem to leap out at me, and Lord knows, I don't know where that came from, because I certainly am well beyond having newborns in the house. At least, I think my wife would agree with me, we hope so. My kids are older, 11 and up, and we certainly haven't had a newborn around here in quite some time, but it seems like we have been talking about kids, babies, and such this particular week. I want to remind you that you can find a whole lot of information about this and every other episode, as well as other articles and interesting information over at the Nursing Show website. Go to nursingshow.com and check out the website over there. You'll find a whole list of articles and things that you can check out. You can search the site for a particular topic. You can look at the show notes and go back into past episodes for The Nursing Show, all right over there. And of course, all the resources, news articles, and links that we talk about in this particular episode. Of course, you can also leave comments about the articles and episodes over there, and I urge you to do that. It's a great way to let me know what you think of the show and what you think about a particular episode. So I urge you to take some time, head over to nursingshow.com and look that up. Also, if you'd like to get back in touch with me directly by email, you can do so. Send me your emails to comments@nursingshow.com, and I will get right back to you. I'd like to hear from you, whether you're sending me a news article link, or perhaps have a comment on a recent episode, or especially a correction. We definitely want to make sure that the most accurate and up-to-date information is presented to the audience here. And I miss things. I'm human. So if you catch me in something that I've misspoken, you definitely need to let me know, because I consider this a community effort. And I want to thank all of you, both the brand new listeners and the long-term listeners, for helping to build and continue to support that community here at The Nursing Show. You also may notice there'll be some changes at the Nursing Show site over the next week or two. Made some adjustments, moved to a new server, and are going to be making some adjustments to the look of the site. So if you like what you see, you can respond appropriately, let me know. And while you're over there, definitely sign up for the Nursing Show newsletter, and that way you can get the show notes and other information sent directly to your email inbox while you're there. Let's jump on in and look at this week's news. And we'll start off with an article talking about screening, routine screening for newborn jaundice. And we're going to talk a lot about newborn jaundice and how to recognize it, what causes it, and some of the nursing interventions later on in the tip segment on this episode. But I did find this study and wanted to talk a bit about it. Now, newborn jaundice, especially the blood test for bilirubin levels in the blood serum, is not a universal practice, although the American Academy of Pediatrics says that there should be either a blood test or some other screening of every single infant following birth because of the danger of jaundice reaching a level before it is adequately assessed where it could cause serious damage leading to seizures and other problems. Now, this is something that we'll talk about a little bit later on, but certainly a blood test is indicated in some infants, but this particular study where they actually instituted a universal screening guideline across Northern California medical facilities seems to be looking at the fact that the study is saying, according to this study, that there's evidence that universal screening during birth hospitalization is a more effective method than just letting it go to pediatric oversight, a pediatrician oversight. And this has been what's happened in the past. It's been up to the pediatrician of the new infant to determine whether or not there is a cause for getting a bilirubin blood test, this or some kind of screening. This is saying that there should be that screening should be presented more universally. We'll take this with a grain of salt. I don't want to say that this isn't a bad idea necessarily, but do we really need to do a blood test universally for infants, for all infants, when they don't all show signs of jaundice early on? There's going to be some levels that are going to be indicated for additional testing. So let's move on. We're looking at the next article where this is going to be causing a little controversy, and I suspect even especially controversy among some of the listeners of the show, and that's okay. Children of working moms have unhealthier lifestyles. This is from a recent study released in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health. And it is suggesting, based on a research of over 12,000 five-year-old children, part of a study in the UK, they found that when they talked about work hours and the children's diet, exercise levels, and sedentary activities, that, and here's no surprise, that when the children's parent wasn't home, actively engaged with what they were doing and making decisions for them, that these children had unhealthier lifestyles, taking into things like certain risk factors such as maternal education and socioeconomic factors, it still showed that children whose mothers worked part or full time were more likely to consume things like sugary drinks between meals, and also were more likely to spend at least 2 hours a day in front of the TV or a computer, and were more likely to be driven to school rather than walk or ride a bike to school as they became older. So some of these things I think are pretty obvious. This is kind of one of those you smack yourself in the forehead kind of moments where, well, of course, there are going to be changes in the way that they're driven to school. But I think it does point out that parents that are home with their children are more able to monitor their diet more carefully and make sure that they are having adequate dietary restrictions when needed, whereas another caregiver, a babysitter, or a daycare center may be less restrictive on some of those things. And not saying all of them, because some are better than others, but we know that across the board, mothers are using a lot of different childcare options, not just certain high-level licensed daycare centers. And so we need to take that into account as a broader factor. Does this mean that all moms should come home and work, come home from work and be stay-at-home moms? Absolutely not. I'm not going to even go there and open that can of worms. But it does point out that we do need to, again, increase our education of some common health practices, risk factors, and concerns, and really look at maybe including some educational resources on nutrition, and really bringing into play some of the ongoing evidence that we're seeing of just reducing the amount of sugar intake in all people to reduce the risk factors for diabetes that we're seeing at epidemic levels. Just recently, the American Heart Association released guidelines for daily sugar consumption for females, for adult females, less than the amount of sugar in one normal container of soda. So just looking at that, we see that kids probably are having too much sugar in their diet, and we need to work on affecting this. So this is an educational issue, and I thought I would bring it up for you. Finally, last article is a press release from the March of Dimes, just saying that they support screening, education, intervention tools preventing preterm birth. And yeah, this is a press release, but what I liked about this article was looking at the broad scope of healthcare providers involved in the birth process. And often on this show, we talk about the kind of groups that are at loggerheads with each other, including the American College of Nurse Midwives and the Association of Women's Health Obstetric and Neonatal Nurses, with their ongoing, headbutting with the American College of OBs and GYNs. This is, something that can cause some issues. But in this case, they really came out together in this symposium with the March of Dimes, looking at some of the programs across the country that have really taken steps to reduce the amount of preterm births and to reduce some of the more higher risk C-section rates. And just generally improving care for women and children, newborn babies and their mothers. They look at some of the studies, hospitals that have reduced elective C-sections to less than 5% from a high of 30%, significant in any terms. Also looking at companies and corporations involved in ownership of different hospitals that have looked at quality improvement programs that are reducing C-section rates and also reducing fetal injuries and obstetric malpractice claims. And then finally, looking at ways to reduce and pre-screen for people at risk for preterm birth and try to deal with the risk factors and complications before the baby is born early. So these things are certainly all good factors. And I just wanted to point out that it's nice to see we all can play nice together and that these groups can come together because we're all really focused on the same goal of healthy pregnancy and a healthy newborn. Time for the tip of the week, and we're going to look at newborn jaundice in a little more detail this week. Now, newborn jaundice, we're going to cover a couple, actually a group of different topics regarding newborn jaundice. We'll look at the types of jaundice, also the causes and risk factors that you might look for in a newborn where you're expecting to see jaundice. We also want to look at some of the things we might be monitoring for these patients. And finally, always nursing interventions to help with the patient and the caregivers when they have an infant with newborn jaundice. So what types are we talking about here? Well, newborn jaundice is a problem that has several different types that cause jaundice in the newborn. And first of all is physiologic jaundice. This is the most common type seen today. And I think it's easier to remember when you look at the first word, physiologic. It has to do with the physiology of the newborn. This is a new person with new organs, and those organs are taking on some duties that they haven't had to do before. I always think of it in those terms. And so when you have this new physiology going on, you have problems with taking on, for instance, in the case of the liver, the breakdown of proteins and disposal or storage of those proteins or forming them into new proteins. All of these things happen. And so as fetal red blood cells are broken down in a newborn and the liver takes over that job, this can cause jaundice as bilirubin, a side byproduct of that breakdown, is accumulated in the blood but not broken down further and distributed and removed. Next up, we have neonatal jaundice, and this is also sometimes referred to as incompatibility or blood incompatibility jaundice. This is related directly to the incompatibility between the mother's blood type and the newborn's blood type. And we're looking here at your Rh factor problems and also AB incompatibility problems between the mother and the child. And this used to be a very common and very serious problem of jaundice. More common, I think, than physiologic jaundice, according to some of the things I've read. However, because we understand how the proteins and typing of blood occurs, and we understand how those incompatibilities operate, we're able to treat this now and be aware of it beforehand. So we keep an eye out for what's going on and treat the mother with the appropriate immunoglobulin to take care of this issue. So this is something that we've seen reduced significantly in most modern situations regarding childbirth. Also, breastfeeding jaundice, and this I found some information about it, and I just wanted to throw it out there. It has to do with some mothers in their breast milk have certain compounds that may contribute to the accumulation of bilirubin. However, it is not considered to be a significant issue, doesn't cause any kind of dangerous accumulations, and is usually resolved very quickly. And one of the cautions I found on the American Academy of Pediatrics website looks at the problem of we don't want to discourage mothers from breastfeeding. So this isn't something that they even recommend testing for. And of course, you test for it by stopping breastfeeding to see if the jaundice goes away. Well, they don't even recommend doing that because of all the benefits of breastfeeding and that early breast milk for immunology of the newborn and also associated with just the nutritional value of breast milk in general. So I put that out there because I thought you should be aware of it. Causes of jaundice in the newborn. Again, I talked about changes in fetal circulation regarding the undertaking of new jobs by the new organs. This has to do with the fact that prior to birth, fetal circulation, as we all know, circulated the fetus's blood through the placenta, where the mother took care of disposing of any byproducts that needed to be handled. And so the mother's liver took over the job of the normal hemolysis or breakdown of red blood cells that occurs all the time. However, when the baby has to take on this itself, that change in fetal circulation means the new liver has to take over that job, and this is the source of our problem in general. Immature organs, and also preterm birth, and this, again, preterm means more immature, so the organs are even more immature, and this can cause issues. So any preterm birth, you're more likely to see a jaundice of one sort or another. Infection can also cause jaundice by causing issues with both the blood and with the liver function. CMV, the cytomegalovirus is one. Also, the rubella virus is another. Should be aware of any time that the mother may have had a recent rubella infection, CMV infection, or anyone around the infant. We need to be aware of these things. Congenital defect. Again, there could be both a physical defect or a physiological defect, and this could be problems with the liver itself. It could be problems with the blood composition. There are numerous things that I've found out there that could be listed under congenital defects. If you want more in details, they are listed in one of our resources. Finally, again, we talked about this briefly, maternal fetal blood incompatibility. And this is something that has largely been eliminated in the developed parts of the world, but it is something you should be aware of, especially if you have a situation where the mother may have given birth outside of the country or in an area where they may not have been monitoring or treating for this. An inadequate fluid intake, this is related to breastfeeding, not necessarily breastfeeding jaundice, but related to just inadequate fluids and a change in blood composition. The risk factors. In healthy full-term newborns, we're going to talk about those in this situation because there are, again, genetic factors and other things, but we should be looking at healthy full-term newborns. What are the common risk factors? First of all, if they have an older brother or sister that was treated with phototherapy for jaundice, it's more likely they're going to get it. And this is just your general family history question. Exclusively breastfed with a high birth weight. And this seems to be related more to if the mother had some kind of preterm diabetes or expected to, that contributes to higher birth weight. And when that happens, there's been some association between that and the newborn jaundice. Bruising during birth. Again, we're talking about the breakdown of red blood cells, so anything that causes an accumulation of red blood cells that need to be broken down, i.e. a large bruise, especially something like a cephalohematoma, then you have a large amount of blood that it's accumulated and needs to be broken down. And as that bruise heals and the blood is reabsorbed and broken down, you're going to have an increased amount of bilirubin until the liver can get rid of it. Anyone of East Asian ancestry, and any baby with jaundice showing up in the first 24 hours means that this is going to be requiring longer treatment and higher levels of treatment. So these babies are more likely to need phototherapy than a baby who first shows signs of newborn jaundice maybe 2 or 3 days after birth, and it resolves 2 or 3 days after that. Monitoring and tests. First of all, assessment of the skin. It seems obvious, but I have to bring it up here because otherwise you'll just think nothing but lab tests. We do need to assess the infant, ask the parents to assess the infant, look for changes. Does it seem to be that the yellow color is worse now than it was before? We're looking at the skin and the whites of the eyes, the sclera of the eyes, for signs of that yellowing. We're monitoring as far as labs. We're looking at serum bilirubin levels. We're looking at the CBC. We want to understand what's going on there. We also want to expect to look for a Coombs test. This is a common blood test for blood incompatibility that is done for newborns almost all the time. I think it's required, so it's not something that you should have to do separately unless it hasn't been done yet for some reason. And also a reticulocyte count. We're looking for new red blood cells in production and genetic testing if there is a suspected genetic cause of the jaundice. As far as interventions, they're pretty simple. First of all, we want to assess feeding. And this is easy if it's a bottle-fed baby, less easy to do in a breastfed baby. And so we want to make sure that the mother's comfortable with feeding, that the baby seems to be getting full and is not requiring or fussy within an hour or 45 minutes, and meaning that they really didn't get much to feed and they need to be fed more frequently. We were looking for fluid adequacy here. Again, dehydration will cause an increased percentage of bilirubin in the blood, increased amount of jaundice. If we can get fluid levels up, we can also help flush the byproducts out of the system and help the liver do its job. We may need to bring in a lactation consultant. In many labor and delivery centers, this is going to be probably, at least initially, one of the nurses, one or more of the nurses on the floor. However, if you're sending someone home, there may be a service that you will want to refer them to, and there may be someone in the community. So you'll need to make sure that you bring in someone to help the new mother breastfeed, because we do want to encourage breastfeeding. Phototherapy is the most common treatment, and this can be sun or mechanical lights that you bring in and shine on the newborn. This is because the ultraviolet light shines on the skin, and actually, as the bilirubin passes through the capillaries, that it is broken down by the ultraviolet light into a form that is much more easily handled by the liver. And so phototherapy is the most common therapy, and it's not terribly invasive. It's pretty easy to administer. Parents that have access to a nice sunny window in a warm room, we want to make sure we keep the baby warm, because we're going to take all the blankets off and we're going to lay the baby in that bright light for a period of time and nothing but a diaper. We also want to protect the baby's eyes, so make sure we have some kind of eye covering to keep the sunlight from shining right in their eyes, or in the case of mechanical lights, the same thing. So this is something to keep in mind, whether it's in a facility or at home. Definitely focus on education. Because newborn jaundice in its various forms may not show up for 2 or 3 days after birth, it is likely that we're not going to see any sign of this in the facilities. And so we need to educate the parents on what to look for, what to expect, and when to call their pediatrician for follow-up. And this is all part of our discharge instructions and educational materials we want to make sure we have available, and we evaluate their effectiveness before we send someone home. Transfusions are very rare and are the treatment of choice when nothing else is working, or when there are some of the incompatibility issues or things like that. And in this situation, you just want to be prepared for your common procedures in wherever your facility is for handling the implementation of blood products. And so you'll want to make sure you are double-checking fetal blood type, newborn blood type. You'll want to make sure that we're double-checking the blood type of the blood product being brought in. All of these are very important and should be standard practice for safety purposes in any facility, but I bring it up here because it's important to talk about. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode. And you need to follow up on the information, because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. Time to close out the show, and I'll close out as I always do with some PodSafe music for you from the PodSafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com is their location on the web, and this is a song by the band Slackstring. It's called Wednesday Morning. If you like what you hear, you'll find a link to the band's site in the show notes, and also information on how you can find their music in places like iTunes. You know, spend 99 cents, go over, buy their song. Show them that you appreciate it, and if you head to their website and leave them a note, definitely let them know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it for me. I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic, reminding all of you to remember to stay safe, and please stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
At my wristwatch, 8 a.m. I read the time. I left my little girl sitting pretty in the bed. Stretched my arms, I touched the sky. Time to clear my weary head. Wednesday morning, take my blues away. Wednesday morning, it's gonna be a brighter day. Wednesday morning. Come so many times before, I used to frown upon my life, but I'm not going to anymore. I waved to Mrs. Johnson, I saw a schoolboy skipping by. Took a domer to my head, what a feeling, what a high. Clapped my hands, kicked up my feet, danced around the yard so sweet. I listened to the birdies sing, the music was a treat. So Chinese.